Hello and welcome, as they say, to GFW Radio, the July 10th edition, featuring Anthony Gallegos, otherwise known as Chuff or Nurgle, Robert Ashley, Sean Elliott, that's me, and Jennifer Sal.
Hi, Anthony.
Hi.
That's our little joke. Now that we sit next to each other.
That works.
We say hi to each other every morning.
You and have it's a to joke. It's not. Me. It's not just no, cordial behavior.
The joke part. The joke part is that for the first, I'd say, 2 weeks, maybe even that I was sitting next to Anthony, I would come in every morning and say, "Hi, Anthony," and that was the end of the conversation.
Yeah, that's rough.
I didn't hear.
What's wrong with you?
One day when I was working from home, you sent me via instant message. You were asking me what Anthony was listening to, and I was like, I can't hear it. And then you were like, I think it's like Enya or Pure Moods or something. So then I started messaging Anthony saying, like, come on, dude, you got to turn the Pure Moods down. Like, I'm trying to work. And then Jennifer.
That was a special moment. That was our Lilith Fair moment.
So then, yeah, Jennifer. Then
Anthony's blushing right now because
you warned me that he was coming to my office to see how, because you knew I wasn't there. So you came to my office to see what was up. So I just messaged back, don't look at my office. I'm not in there right now.
Yeah. That's when I figured out that Jen was behind it all.
So to get a few things out of the way right off the beginning, Jeff Green, our usual host, is still out on vacation. He'll be back this next week during E3, and we'll be recording multiple podcasts over the course of the show. And Sean Malloy is now 2 weeks gone, 3 weeks gone as of now, and he's at Blizzard, we can say that. No details other than that he's left us for Blizzard, and we have no one to tape our podcast, and Jen is so kindly volunteered to help out. And
that's
to be and do double duty, to be a guest and let that thing go in the background.
Yes.
And to hit the button.
So if anything gets screwed up, you can blame me.
Okay. So let's do it Jeff style. We've got a lot to talk about. Followed up by what do we got to talk about?
Well, I don't know. Cause
you want an update? You want an update? Chuff love.
Okay.
Okay, so before we introduced a segment, we didn't know if it would be a continuing segment. We called it Chuff Love. Anthony's nickname is Chuff.
Is that two F's?
No, but it is when we write Chuff Love for some reason.
It is, huh?
Yeah.
It means something else to our listeners in the United Kingdom and Ireland than it means to us. But
so it sounds like a bad word.
It does, and in some parts of the world it is. But so Chuff basically asked a woman on a date, and she worked at EB Games. Yeah.
A lady.
And we sort of told the tale about how Anthony was waiting just for that right moment when the other clerks weren't going to be there to make him feel embarrassed, and he got her alone for a second and said, hey, I came to ask you for your phone number, something like that.
Yeah, just not quite as smooth as that. It's even way more awkward.
So now you can give us an update. This is Chuff Love. Mm. Actually, Robert, we're not ready. Let's like prolong the satisfaction for a minute. Give me some kind of song for this.
The thing that kept on popping in my head talking to Anthony earlier was, are you chuff enough? Down, down. Are you chuff enough?
Fabulous Thunderbirds.
I thought it was ZZ Top.
No,
but you're right.
It is Fabulous Thunderbirds. I can prolong it a little because when I remember first hearing about this when Alice was having her little Tetris DS Royal Rumbles, and I heard them talk about how Alice had given you some advice on picking up a girl, and I asked for more details, and again, Anthony did not answer. I politely let it drop.
Yeah.
I did want to know desperately. Like
at the time, there wasn't any details to give, but since then, hung out a couple of times. We went out for ice cream at like midnight the other night.
Oh, shit.
That was pretty cool.
She listened to the podcast in which Jeff Green offered her a date if she was interested in older Jewish men.
And that's when it got awkward.
older married Jewish men.
That's when it got awkward, though, because like, she swears she's joking, but like 3 times she's asked me to get Jeff's number.
I know. I was telling you. Like, she keeps bringing it up as a joke.
You got to watch it, man. That guy's a fox.
Yeah, have you seen his blog?
I have.
It's all women throwing themselves at him.
Gallivanting nude on the beach in Spain, basically.
Wow.
Basically.
Really? I'm glad I didn't check
it out. Actually see that.
I didn't.
It's not nude, but
type.
He does say it's the last time or the only time you'll ever see a picture of me in my underwear on the internet. Check it out, people.
I say we get together as much money as possible to make sure that he's a liar. Like, how much money would it take to get him to pose in his underwear again? if he claims that that's the only time.
Probably not much.
I don't know.
All right.
I don't talk about
No interest from Sean. Come on.
It's making me feel really uncomfortable. I don't know, man. Actually, it's not. It's news to me. I haven't looked
at
it.
I was telling
this
girl, though, that we should get her to come on the podcast at some point because, you know, she plays games. And then you guys could ask her some shit, but that would be awkward.
If you're willing, then by all means, bring her on.
We should do like a dating game thing. Oh, you know, God. Like separate you guys with a little wall and ask you questions about games and see if your answers match up and stuff.
She plays a lot of different games, though. She doesn't play any shooters at all.
We're just going to ask her, like, did Shuff look like he was giving, like, his first speech in, like, you know, freshman college, like, public speaking or something when he
did his voice crack?
That's probably exactly what it was like, as a matter of fact.
Did you object to the Taco Bell wrappers and the half-eaten burrito in the backseat of his car? Real detail.
That was one time.
So wait, how did she find out about the podcast thing?
Oh, I ended up telling her because all these bored kids kept on being like, I go to that store. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to talk to her. And see. I was like, all right, I'm just going to tell her before she finds out through some third party and some. By that time, I had already gotten to know her well enough that I knew she'd like take it in a good way. Yeah. And if she didn't, then it would be like a kick to the curb. So. I'm just kidding. Like, I'm hard like that.
She was cool with it, right?
Yeah. No, she's totally cool. So, but beyond us just hanging out a few times, there's nothing to update yet.
No more updates.
Yeah. Right. Not that I would be the type that would ever, like, kiss and tell the internet.
Right.
Anyways.
It's not like you're going to come on the podcast and, like, break it down.
We're not looking for, like, an account of, like, physical transactions here. Just, you know,
how's
the chuff love going is all we want to know.
No, it's going good.
All right. Good.
So, you know. I think it could be good.
Should next movie night borrow? Robert has a video cassette called Colossal Combos.
I do not.
What is Colossal Combos?
It's some heinous pornography that Sean was telling me about. Somebody made like these compilation tapes of like random porn scenes and sold them.
Oh God! Let's get in. Okay.
All right, anyway,
we have a warning that we're gonna get right into like game related subject matter right after this.
Yeah.
But like, let's not leave this like hanging there.
Because you can't resist.
Into the conversation about how different like the experience with pornography is for young people today than our day, and how like it was entirely common to sit around with a group of guys and watch a porno together, and how like in today's era where everyone's got their own computer and they're used to it being this really private thing, like they're
and
probably
it would be really
extremely
weird,
uncomfortable, and awkward sitting around with a bunch of dudes like hoping that. Like no one's got boners and watching
the stag party, man.
But the other part of it is that like you know you to nowadays kids can get whatever they want, but like back then it was you know you couldn't be too choosy. You'd get whatever someone's older brother didn't want anymore, and what he
or
didn't
what
want.
You could like dig out of the closet of like your friend whose dad was like a completely irresponsible human being and had like disgusting porn just crawling throughout his house. Yeah,
and one of those like that epitomized that quality of pornography was called Colossal Combos, but there were hundreds of them, and it was basically some company that would ordinarily produce like full-length porno pictures. We just throw scenes, select scenes from everything. Not very discriminately, though, apparently, just onto this Colossal Combo tape series. And I described it as being, like, going from wankable material to, like, hideous surprises that would immediately kill any interest you had in sex from that tape forward. So.
Oh.
Okay, so
yeah.
The game stuff, to start off.
Good segue.
I can't hide it. It's good. We were going from porn to games, so
it's not that far of a jump, honestly. Yeah.
So, Robert, you just wrote a story. It hasn't been published yet, but that is about a few things. But in the loosest sense, is about tournament gaming and pro gaming making it big.
Yeah.
Big in the sense that you see, you know, Texas Hold'em on TV, ESPN6 or whatever. And,
yeah.
And we
although
both,
that story isn't posted yet.
It's not. No, I'm sort of anticipating it. And we both read, you know, the book called Game Boys by Michael Caine, that's about more or less the same subject. It follows this rivalry between two different teams vying for the number one American Counter-Strike playing team title.
Yeah. So I sort of got interested in the subject, if only because, I don't know, like, up until a couple of months ago, competitive gaming always struck me as this sort of, you know, sort of behind the scenes of the game industry that I follow and the things that I enjoy. You know, you'd go to E3 and there would be like some little booth in the bottom floor of the convention center with like Fatality hawking his like professional mouse.
Yeah,
you know, like, who is this guy and does he really make money playing games? I don't know. I don't really care. But like for
he does.
This book, Game Boys, popped up, and then along with that, like, I sort of found out about several things going on with games. Like, I saw the first episode of this ESPN show called Madden Nation, which is a reality TV show about hardcore Madden players who play each other.
No way.
like, competitively.
How have we not got press releases for this?
I don't know.
They're not full.
They're not promoting that very well. But that and then there's another league for competitive gaming called Major League Gaming that has a that has a deal with ESPN. They do like a Saturday night sort of live competition thing on their broadband network. And then this book covers another sort of attempt at making a spectator sport out of gaming, and it's called Championship Gaming Series.
Mm-hmm.
Championship Gaming Series, owned by DirecTV. They do live events for their own league, which they basically bought up like a bunch of American Counter-Strike teams and sort of put on this big budget Hollywood style tournament, and that's what the book is about, kind of following these two teams before all that happened in Counter-Strike, struggling to make it you know, something that people care about. And
yeah,
it's pretty interesting. It's not the greatest book in the world, but it's really enthralling once you get to the point where you're following it as kind of like an underdog sports drama.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Like, I'm about 100 pages in right now. I just picked it up, and already I'm at the point where, like, I'm looking forward to when we're done taping this and I go home, I'll read more on the way home. And what's making it work for me is exactly what you're saying. I mean, just the interpersonal story and the underdog story of, I mean, who are the people that do this for a living? And then this, like, totally fascinating character of, what's his first name? Is it Josh Lake?
Jason Lake.
Jason Lake, who's, yeah, you know, basically out of his own pocket, is at the point in the story where I'm at, he's already invested $250,000 into financing, into paying these players, you know, and
yeah,
him sort of functioning as their coach and to claim the top title. They don't have, so far, they don't have any meaningful sponsorships, whereas they're competitive. And the team that they run is Complexity, and they're up against, you know, 3D, Team 3D.
Who are, like, professionally sponsored. They've got, like, NVIDIA.
And Intel.
And all their players are paid by the sponsorships. They've got this guy, Craig Levine, who's a really pretty with-it business guy, who was the first person, to, as far as I can tell, to professionally sponsor a team in the U.S. And Jason Lake has this total, like, you know, I want to be number one attitude. He's going to go after these guys and steal their sponsors and become the number one team in America. And
right,
so to do that, he starts, like, slacking off his law business and putting everything on the credit card and pissing off his family.
He's just had a second child.
Yeah.
And, yeah, his wife's supportive, I gather.
Yeah.
But
understandably, yeah, like, sort of peeved and worried, because I mean, I couldn't imagine going into that kind of debt with your husband being like, don't worry, hon, Counter-Strike's the next NBA.
Right. And not only that, yeah, not only, I mean, whatever charisma and, you know, an ability to sell her on his idea he has. I mean, the fact of the matter is that he's spending hours and hours a week with these boys or young men that are between, you know, like 18 and 21. And meanwhile, he has two children of his own that are presumably not getting all the attention that they could be getting from their father. So that was interesting. The scene right in the beginning that sold me on it, where I was like, okay, I'm going to keep reading this, is when after it was a CPL winter tournament in Dallas,
mm-hmm,
there's this part where his team, you know, Lake's team, Complexity, didn't fare well, and neither did 3D. And he's in this bar afterwards, sort of, you know, drowning his sorrows, having, you know, expensive drink after expensive drink. Mm-hmm. And then the coach, you know, the owner, Levine, comes in from the other team, and they're talking, and it's just, the room is just electric because these guys have, you know, they have all this animosity and tension, and yet they're trying to be civil there. And then this third guy comes up, this nobody, and it's a
Jax from the Jax Money Crew, this sort of third team that is a tier down from these two teams.
And he's, yeah, and he sounds like this, he's described as just this total, like, smart ass punk. And he's coming in basically just like talking shit, like, that was some tournament, huh, guys? And those guys are sitting there clearly like, you know, they look like Wall Street people, like a day after a stock market crash or something. And he's coming in just talking all sorts of shit. And then on top of it, then this, like, this person who has no relation to it whatsoever sits down by him and makes this racist comment about sports on TV. And then, you know, Lake almost gets into a fist fight with him.
Yeah.
And it's just like, just from there on, it's like, this is just good storytelling and like good reporting on what's going on with these
people.
Yeah.
And the guy I interviewed, Michael Caine, the writer, and he used his advance to drive around the country and meet the kids and the coaches from both of these teams, and they're all over the country because they don't, you know, practice together. They're just like internet friends, and they get together for these tournaments. And he really, I think, got to know most of the kids really well, enough for you to be able by the end of the book to differentiate everyone's personal story and feel that each person has like a stake in what they're doing. And I thought that was pretty interesting. I mean, I think it's probably pretty difficult to figure out what separates, you know, 10 Counter-Strike players from one another. I mean, gamers aren't exactly,
but it works well. Like there's the 3D guy who was Rambo. He was previously like the tactician for the team, and he was kind of bumped down so Moto, this other player, could step in, and he had an entirely different way about it. Whereas like Rambo's like approach is like, we're good players, we just go in and play well. Let's just be comfortable and do what we do. And his replacement, Moto, is very much about, this is our playbook, we're going to practice it over and over and over again, and I'm going to yell at you until you get it right. It's going to be all about, you know, strategy and deception and all these sorts of things. And so you see the difference not only in their style, but in how people are reacting to them. I mean, you're hearing, like, meanwhile, in this other scene that I just read through, you know, they're in the cyber cafe trying to practice, and half of them are paying attention to other things. There's a guy in the parking lot who gets on the phone and finds out someone offered to give his girlfriend a tattoo for a blowjob. So he, during the course of the same scene, goes down to the tattoo parlor, punches the guy in the face, and then comes back to practice.
That's a guy.
Then there's guys smoking dope in the car, and they come in.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a guy from a different team, Mug and Mouse, from Dallas.
Oh, he was the local team.
And I talked to that guy for this story.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. Like, he had gone to Kuwait to be a contractor during the wars.
Right, and ended up stopping through Southeast Asia.
Yeah, and he ended up playing for the world tournament of Championship Gaming Series from the Kuwait team. I didn't realize that they had like international teams, but apparently they have like a big international event at the end of each of their seasons.
So wait, he played for the Kuwait team?
Yeah, because he was in Kuwait as a contractor. And that's when I found out that actually that Iraq had a Counter-Strike team but couldn't get the visas to leave the country and play, which would have been a killer story if I'd found out about it, you know, not 6 months later.
Right.
So, but yeah, that guy's really interesting. Interesting kid. But yeah, there are all sorts of, you know, really, really fun scenes in the book. And the thing that amazed me most, though, was just the fact that this guy who is not a gamer, Michael Caine, he's not really into games per se. He's a sports writer. He manages to get in there and figure out what makes Counter-Strike enjoyable to watch and to observe. And he sort of, you know, gets it down to the level of being able to describe a game play by play and make you excited about what's going on in it. You know, you feel like some actual tension like you would if you're reading about like a big like football game or a basketball game or something.
It shows you the strength of like good reporting. I mean, you know, you might end up going and doing a piece on like a national research laboratory. You may not be a physicist yourself, but a good reporter is going to be able to communicate that, and then other physicists can read it and say, yes, this checks out. We were saying there are a few instances in this book, I'll note one and you can note another, where I think someone who's like, you know, identifies himself as a hardcore gamer will raise an eyebrow, and The dangerous thing, I don't know if this is a corrected. This is a corrected copy.
That's it. My copy is uncorrected, okay, and this stuff is the same.
I'm looking at a corrected copy, I think. And right in the introduction, there's the statement that in September 2007, the game Halo 3 released with a record 4.2 billion units on store shelves in its first 24 hours. And if you do the math there, I think that means that every man, woman, and child who lives above, like, the subsistence level in the world, and then many people who live below subsistence, all got themselves a copy of Halo.
All got themselves two copies of Halo.
Yeah, three copies.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one of those things where, like, a gamer is going to get caught up immediately, like, reading that and think, oh, this is bullshit. I mean, it's hard to report on games if, you know, the audience is so... You know,
you trip the bullshit detectors with credibility right up front.
Yeah.
But after that, though, like, you got another one I want to let you
know. Yeah,
out.
Well, and there's a lot. I mean, as far as, like, if you're reading this as a gamer, there's a lot of repetitive instances of him pointing out that gamers aren't, in fact, sociopathic, pimply, basement-bound teenagers who, you know, want to kill people.
Right.
And that's always presented as, like, a surprise. Like, who knew?
Yeah.
Who knew? I thought they were all...
And that story's told over and over again.
Yeah, and I got the feeling that was, like, a...
piece, you know?
Yeah, I got the feeling that was something coming down from his editor that, like, he had to really explain
right. And
to people.
You can imagine that.
Yeah.
So let's
the other thing is... The other thing is a little bit more funny to me. Like, there's some discussion of how Counter-Strike was born. It was a Half-Life mod, and he tries to explain the significance of mods in the gaming scene, and gives a short history of the phenomenon. So I'll just read this. In 1998, the Counter-Strike phenomenon began inconspicuously with the release of a game called Half-Life. By the late 90s, internet speed had advanced to a point where online leagues existed for the most popular first-person shooter games like Doom and Quake. Half-Life was something of a poor man's Quake, a decent one-on-one shooter, but with nothing on the surface revolutionary. What was revolutionary was the prescience of its developer, Valve Software, in allowing players to mod the game. It's just funny, like, if you follow Half-Life, to think of it as, like, a poor man's Quake. But beyond that...
The thing there, in his defense, if he's referring to Half-Life as a multiplayer game, and he's thinking of, like, Half-Life Deathmatch...
Yeah.
Like, someone could put that argument, you know, for
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And but then again, though, when it says that it invented modding, and that which isn't the case, you know.
Yeah.
But also, like, yeah, that's your placement of Half-Life in the universe. So, like, for us, you read that, you kind of, like, trip up on it. But the thing for me, though, is that aside from those sorts of you know, little blunders,
yeah,
he's able, like, you were saying, you know, to praise him, to have such a firm grasp, not only on the people who play Counter-Strike, but how the game itself works, but to communicate it in language that our parents could understand and feel like, I know how this game works. Now, if I go and watch Sean or Robert play this game, like, it's not going to be a complete mystery to me anymore.
Yeah.
And it's not just of saying, like, I mean, because it would really be easy, right, to describe what first-person point of view means in game language and then say that people's heads get blown off and they die and then people get angry at that point. But to really work out the way that we use terminologies like ramp room and banana for parts of the map, the ways that, like, concealment and cover work with flashbangs,
yeah,
with the crates and...
And identifying really the different roles that people are playing on the team. Like, he really goes into the teamwork aspect, mm-hmm, of Counter-Strike and how that makes it, you know, more interesting to follow, because you do have players playing these different roles. And he goes a lot into talking about this guy, Fraud, who I had never followed this stuff before reading this book. But
the king of the oppers.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, like, just an incredibly amazing sniper. And a lot of the narrative in describing these, like, big championship games that he talks about in the book is focused on, you know, him, like, pulling off the great shot, like, at the last minute, or, like, losing his game, and now everyone's like, "Oh God, what are we gonna do? Fraud's down." You know, it's just like the sports
dealing
movie
with his,
you know,
with his egomania, because he's got the highest kill death ratio in the nation. Dealing, like, with his morale, because their playbook is largely designed around supporting, around giving him the platform to excel in the way that he uniquely does. And then when you start to pull out, you know, bits of that support system, then the whole thing collapses.
Right.
Yeah.
I think let's turn it into something general, though. I wanted to, like, you know, put this out there for all of us. Like, you can answer this question in the context of having read the book and someone trying to convince you, and then, you know, for Robert and Jen, whatever you think. But would you be interested in watching, you know, following these kind of games televised? And then another thing to throw in there too is that, like, or maybe even not just televised, but in some other capacity, because uniquely with these games, as opposed to, you know, when you're watching a replay of a football, I mean, you can actually spectate live in the game and move the you can be your own camera person. You can put your camera in the eyes of another player. You can do anything, rewind and fast forward as you want. So there's a couple different options. But, I mean, and in the bigger picture, do you think that this is going to, are these guys, I mean, do they have a hope in heaven of it making it big? Big in the sense that it's like snowboarding on ESPN or something within the next 5 years?
I mean, the freedoms that you talk about are actually, will probably hurt it in that regard, because as somebody who has in the last like 5 to 8 years gotten really into football on TV, like that's me. And it's only because I've had people in the room with me able to explain why things are significant, and explain the plot of the game, so that it didn't take me too long to figure out the rules. I mean, I learned the rules a long time ago, but I never enjoyed watching it until I understood the intricacies of it. So if I don't have somebody doing that, then it's going to be tough.
What if it was televised in a way that you had someone with, you know, with the power of explanation that Michael Caine has here, and so someone's able to lay it out?
Whenever there's a genuine story, which it sounds like this guy has the ability to do, and that there is, then there's drama, you know, that's what you want. So, I mean, I was actually thinking as you guys were talking, this sounds like the King of Kong crew, movie crew's next
yeah,
opus,
right,
you know,
right.
like they need to find all these people and go and follow them on their next, you know, crusade or whatever. So, I mean, as long as there's a plot, then yeah, I think that there may be some problem though when you're not watching people. I mean,
when the plot involves, say, a 19-year-old who hasn't worked a day in his life?
I mean, I don't think, you know, that has nothing to do with it personally.
Okay.
Because, like, I mean, any specialized competitive thing, or really any specialized field, I mean, people don't care of the history behind, like, that Kobayashi guy, you know, the champion hot dog eater guy or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, like, fascinating. You don't even need somebody to explain the story. You just want to watch it. So, like, you don't care really who's doing it. All you care is, like, wow, they have skills that I can't fathom, you know?
And that he cares about it, and that he, like, identifies, like, his sense of self-worth with how many hot dogs he can eat. How many, like, you know, how many people he can hit with his op.
I mean, on the other side of that, I think part of what makes professional gaming or competitive gaming as a spectator sport interesting is that it's accessible to the audience in ways that football or basketball really isn't. You know, by the time you're 14 years old, you know you're not going to be a professional basketball player. You know you're not going to be in the NFL. You know you're not going to have a chance. And, you know, by the time you're
20... Kill yourself.
No, but I mean, by the time you're 20, if you were any good at all, then you know for sure. But when it comes to games, like, people really can, you know, get in there and practice and see how good they are playing the exact same game that the professionals are playing. And I think that aspect, like the fact that you could interact and maybe, you know, sign up for one of these tournaments, like Major League Gaming does a tournament circuit that is related to their whole thing, where they go to different cities and you can sign up to try to make your way in that. And that's cool. I mean, I think that's an interesting thing that other sports don't have. But yeah, I think the big challenge is going to be getting people to understand the game, because it is complicated. Like, Counter-Strike is pretty complicated, especially because it's really fast. They need people to slow it down and say, whoa, did you see that? Like, that was really cool. But, I mean, if you're just sitting there watching 5 screens of people playing Counter-Strike, it just looks like chaos.
Right. And I think the same way, too. If you were to watch, like, some sports, you know, some sports more than others, it would look like it's just a bunch of people running around and kicking a ball. If you were from Mars, you know, and in the same way, you look at Counter-Strike or any FPS, and all it looks like is bang, 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 bang. So it's like, okay, it's people shooting guns, you know, and you don't understand that actually there's, you know, this intricate thing of deception here, anticipating that their opponents are going to try to put two people blockers on this side of the map while other people are doing this and that, and working out that there's an actual play.
Well, just with a reason just to the it. Maps and, alone on these games are a barrier to entry, I think.
That's a great point.
For an everyday person, you know? I mean, because professional or even like enthusiast people for any game, like, they know the maps mm-hmm. super, super well.
And a baseball diamond or like a football field or a soccer or a basketball court are really easy to diagram and communicate to people, whereas like Dust 2.
The closest thing would be like, a ski slope that has some difficult jumps, and sometimes the jumps might not look that difficult on TV, but you still kind of get it.
Yeah.
You know?
What about paintball? Maybe that's like a good thing. People have started televising paintball.
Hmm.
You know, and I'm sure maybe they would do the same. They'd find some way to communicate to people with the courses.
I was going
to
say, or even something like golf. I mean, golf, all the courses are pretty technical, and they have, like, a really specific layout that only golfers are really going to understand, like, the wind speed and all the things that are going in.
Right.
So, like, picking
Although
a
golf,
club in the grass.
Golf really has that benefit of, like, having one of those human skills that is just, like, retardedly amazing. Like, when you watch someone hit a golf ball perfectly and it goes, like, 10 times further than you could ever hit a golf ball. You're just like, wow.
This is where I think I do differ a little bit. Like, you know, I mean, also in your story, you bring up the idea that with video games, you're so used to playing them yourself, it's hard to watch someone play it, and the notion of doing that. But for me, it's like, I mean, like, there's a basketball court right across the street from a house, and people of all ages are playing there all the time. And you think about how many people we know, like, in the building that are involved with, like, you know, weekend soccer leagues and things like that. And I think that, you know, people, and golf too, there's so many people that play golf, and they know they're playing the same game, but they know they're never going to play it like, you know, Arnold Palmer or something, in the same way that we know we're not going to play this game like, you know, Rambo or any of the different people in this book. You know, it's just not going to happen. And the way that it's placing it too is it's like a child choir or something, you know, like you hit your expiration date at like 22 years old and you retire.
Yeah.
You know,
well, cause how can you play Counter-Strike for 5 hours a day, you know, for the rest of your life? Like, most people would start to feel a little bit like a loser.
Yeah.
Well, so on that note, about these coaches.
Yes.
So obviously, you know, they have bossy tactics and but what qualifies them or qualified them to coach?
That's true. Are they money. Like a 10-year like Counter-Strike player and like they just know
they
it back,
were
back
that guy who played for 5 hours a day for 10 years?
For Jason Lake, what qualified him was having the money to hire good players, and he just has this personality of, like, you know, a high school football coach that just fits. I mean, he's not doing that much coaching. He's
more
the
of a manager.
He'll still slap you on the back.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he trusts his play callers and his players to do what they need to do. He's mainly just pacing behind them at the events. He, like, notoriously is pacing back and forth behind their chairs, like, getting red and, like, yelling whenever they lose or, like, you know, shouting victoriously when they win.
He's the anomaly, too. Other guys, like Levine for 3D, doesn't do this. He's might not even be there. He's more like, I fund and manage this, whereas it's like Lake, the sense I get is that he's paying the money.
He needs to
live this, you know, he's vicariously living his dream through. Like, there came a point when he realized, like we were saying, sure, I can hit a golf ball. I just can't hit it as far as, you know, these people or with the precision of these people. And just said, well, it's not going to keep me from liking this.
Yeah.
I'm going to still be here. But the difference is that he'll tell you, like, good job, or like, you know, you guys are falling apart, but not like you know, Anthony, you need to pick this weapon and you need to, like, take banana or something rather than...
It's all platitudes.
He's not, like, drawing it out on a whiteboard at intermission.
Part of the thing that comes across as really interesting to me about Lake as a character in the book is that the way that Michael Caine paints him, he's, you know, hit midlife. He has a couple of kids and a mortgage and a law office. And this is his sort of return to hanging out with the guys to a certain degree, like revisiting a time in his youth when he was really competitive and, you know, hung out with the bros and you know, did that. And that's what drew him to it, maybe. But, yeah.
The whole thing I was thinking about the whole time when I was listening to you guys talk about it was like football and all these things are like the same across the whole country. And it's like in Korea, they've been successful with gaming because they have StarCraft and it's like everybody plays StarCraft. But I'm trying to think of a game here in America that could be like that game that is like the American like video game that everyone plays. You know what I mean? Because there are so many games. There's like millions of little tournaments for Smash Bros. Or other fighting games. But yeah, it's like,
that's
what is
true,
that,
because like
what is that
poker,
one game?
I mean, this seems the most like poker, which I know plenty of people who are not professional poker players, but they compete and they get to the World Series of Poker and they're like on one of the side tables or whatever, they make it a few rounds and that's great for them. I mean, this seems really similar where, you know, you might pick up whatever game. I mean, that poker is just this classic game. It's not changing, but for video games, it's always going to change.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think the advantage that StarCraft has is being a strategy game. I think the action oriented, like sort of athletic games, like shooters, like Counter-Strike, that's going to be a big problem for them. I mean, already like the Counter-Strike competitive community like resists change. They want to play, you know, the old 1.6 version, and there's a newer, even though it looks, you know, pretty dated now.
It's
Source.
Old, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Source version, and people really dislike that version. And so it's hard to play a game competitively and then expect it to, to follow the same development cycle of games now where you expect everything to look nice and be visually interesting.
So they're not moving off Counter-Strike?
No.
That's so it
no,
doesn't...
I wouldn't be surprised if people are still playing it like, 10 years from now.
Yeah, many of the people in there say that like everyone who plays Counter-Strike, and we all know we'll be playing this game forever. Like they, I mean, there's multiple, you know, like people on the team is like, this is it. And then to the point where I wanted to, you know, I'm glad you brought it up. It's this other theme of, you know, resistance to change. But when you look at a game as being competitive, and I can actually tie in some impressions of Soul Calibur 4, which I just reviewed for EGM. But like when you have a game and you're regarding it as a sport, you really have to, I mean, you don't want to radically revise it every year, like you're saying, in the same way that the NBA is not going to introduce the three-point line. And a change to the height of the rim in a single season. I mean, those might be, either of those could be acceptable changes, you know, on their own over time, but you don't just go in and after a while, then it's not basketball, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you get games like, this is well documented with StarCraft. It's like, we can do new things, but it has to still be StarCraft. And then reviewing fighting games is difficult in that way too, because some people expect them, you know, they say, well, this is just the same game or something, you know, but like if you really seriously play it, it's funny because even changes to a character that you're used to are really, really dramatic to you. And like, if you aren't someone who takes the game seriously, you're like, seriously, that's your idea of a change, of an improvement in a sequel.
Yeah.
It's to give someone like six new moves and a new stance and change the inputs for the old moves. But like for me, I mean, I'm not a tournament player or anything, but it's like I take it serious enough to want to be competitive. Like when I play someone, I expect to like have a good chance of winning. And so like whenever I get a new one of these games, I'll spend like a week just in practice mode looking at all the characters and stuff. And if like my principal characters are changed differently, I don't feel like empowered anymore. And that's like the worst feeling, is to go to a game that you think that you're competent at and to feel like all of my learning is out the window, you know?
Yeah.
All the muscle memory isn't going to serve me because all the inputs are different now. But instead, if there's like just a few new things to change the way I think of the game, but then I can apply every bit of learning and memorization and everything that I've already inhabit that I have to excel at learning the new thing, that works out well.
Yeah. The trouble with it is like, there's always going to be the schism between people who play a game competitively and people who are just not casual, but just gamers who want to pick up a new game and play it. The people who just want to pick up a new game and play it are going to be the people who are paying for the game. You know, it's like that's going to be the bigger crowd every single time. They're going to try to grab a bigger audience of people who had never played Soul Calibur. They're going to try to grab, or any game, you know, any new game that comes out, like a new Counter-Strike even, you know. Meanwhile, like, it's going to be hard to sell the old hardcore crew on changing the version that they're playing, to spend that money to begin with.
To get something else, yeah.
It's going to be like one of those eternal things.
It's a tough challenge, but I don't think, I mean, like, depending on how specific, I think that people like myself in this case are really where most of the money is coming from for a game like Soul Calibur or something. I mean, Like, there's someone who's like, whatever, it's a fighting game. It's people that punch each other on a screen. And then whatever comes out, you know, like a new Mortal Kombat, you know, or something like that. And then not to
what
knock Mortal Kombat.
What about Madden,
like,
actually? Like, that's an interesting example.
It's the same, yeah.
But I always wonder, like, is it the same people buying it? Because it's always such a top seller that you kind of wonder, well, these people can't all be the same people buying it year after year. Because, like, how could they? Or why?
I think a lot of the same people buy Madden every year. I mean, I think amazingly, I think a lot of the same people buy Madden every year and a college game. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I think they double up on it even. It's kind of amazing to me because I don't play. I'm terrible at
well, Madden, that's what I was thinking because I have tried, like, I'd say every third year maybe I'll try to get into Madden and I just never can. But I sort of look back at the very old football games and I remember playing them when I was super young and I'm like, oh, what if they put something like that out? Then I would be into it. And especially now that I'm like a fan of football, it would be that much more fun. But Madden is just not going to
really
be that
inaccessible.
You know?
Yeah.
So, but they
and EA is doing this though. They're basically making this line of you know, mass market. Well, it's kind of weird to say that since Madden is so mass market as it is.
Casual.
But even more casual version of football for Wii. They have that new series.
I mean, I don't know. Because I also played NFL Street, and believe it or not, you know, that one was supposed to be more accessible.
In some ways, it's more complicated in just different ways and different along different lines because it introduces like a ton of combos.
I mean, I'm talking about the one that was like on a LED screen, you know, and the lights and like.
Oh yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm talking about when I was in the single
digits.
When the
hyphen touched the hyphen.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like Tecmo Bowl. That was like the last football game that I played. I used to play tons of sports games when I was a kid before they became about real sports. They used to just be games that were sort of sports themed. You know, Tecmo Bowl was not football. It was a game that was sports themed. You know, it was its own game. Now it's you play football.
But it was
football.
Like a really rudimentary approximation.
Yeah, it was like a really abstract version of what you would do in a
football.
Or
like early
game.
Hockey games or something
like
that.
Yeah, sure.
That you
which
get
were
into.
so very, very little different from a soccer game.
Right.
You know, like those were all, I could always play soccer and hockey games because they're the same game until now. I mean, now they're very different, but yeah.
Plate of steel.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't
play.
There
was like a sweet spot in between the Atari 2600 era when it was really. I mean, it was coming out of that hyphen touch and the hyphen abstraction into like the Nintendo first era where it was just called soccer or football or baseball. Like those were pretty cool. They were easy to get into.
Maybe the next Wii Sports will be like more in depth stuff. I could see like Wii Sports football being the Tecmo Bowl of now.
If they took the baseball thing and made it into a baseball game that's no more complicated than baseball was for Nintendo.
There is such a game, just so you know, coming out. It's like the official Little League game.
As long as it's not... Oh, Little League, that's cool.
It's the official Little League game with like real Little League teams from around the world. I guess Little League is like
that's
totally
a little
tangent,
creepy to me.
But Little League's like, you know, one of the most watched
like,
sports
oh God,
in the world.
I can't wait till the new Little League game comes out. I hope it has all the real rosters of all my favorite child baseball players. Oh. Billy, you were so good as a catcher.
Oh.
It's a specificity we don't, don't encourage.
Bobby.
Bobby. Sports games.
Yeah.
And gaming as a sport.
I would like to see it. I mean, I would even pay online if I could see like games that I was into. Like, I don't know about seeing it like in a mass media form, but if they offered to like stream me matches live, if I paid like $2 to watch a tournament or something like that, I'd totally do it for like games I was into specifically. Like a Company Heroes one, I'd pay to like watch streamed games.
Well,
I'd like to see like a good.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
You know what I want to see?
My comment is...
Actually, I want to see the team-based cooperative RPG competitive. The ones that are like tactics based. So
you're
like,
talking about people having a hard time dealing with the counter strike map.
You have to sit there and watch as someone scrolls through all the words.
Because certain
save the town, you know, whatever.
Okay, let's say we can put in a code to skip all the cutscenes. So when you get to a certain room and there's like a really difficult combination of enemies, and it takes creative tactics, and a variety of different tactics can make you proceed. Like,
yeah.
I think that would be fun to watch how different teams approach it.
And that's what I'm thinking, is that maybe if they just stop spending so much money on trying to make it like a big Hollywood event,
yeah,
and they just did it all virtually, you know, and people tuned in virtually and all that, it could become like a profitable thing.
Well, I mean, I think it's obvious. It's
microtransactions,
obvious.
Really.
On Jen's thing, like for televising it,
Sean's looking at me like,
it seems like a typically like male female schism, cultural, of course, that we're talking about here, and that would be like guys want to see, like, no, it's not like what you described as like
action.
Darts, you know, like
right.
We want to see someone's got to get hurt, like someone has got to lose.
Yeah, and I want to see cooperation and communication.
Wow, what a great
creative
team!
Thinking.
They really beat the computer,
which exists in Counter-Strike, but with the ultimate goal of triumphing over other people's
to prove
that they're inferior at cooperating
I could see that. I mean,
go ahead.
I was just gonna say I could see you know what you're talking about. Being all over YouTube. I mean, already there's proof that people do want to watch video games, and the amount of clips of gaming that people do watch. And I mean, I've watched tons of stuff, like tons of like Team Fortress moments that I've really enjoyed, or even like Halo videos can be really funny.
And like, those are all competitive, like you're saying, but I've even seen videos like Jen's talking where you just see like a raid group in World of Warcraft be like, this is how we did this dungeon from start to finish. And they put up YouTube videos,
yeah,
and people just watch to be like,
cool.
Oh, that's how they did that as a team. Like, oh, they coordinated like that. Like, and I mean, people.
I could see that in WoW, like as far as like a huge ass raid.
Exactly.
What about instead of like the NBA model, you looked more toward like Bravo Network, and you had like Top Chef or something. And
that's what I was thinking of the whole time, like pastry chefs or something. Like, I've watched a whole show about people that are just making cakes, but I think that's what she's saying. Like, it has to have that human drama in there about it, where you're like,
this guy
freaks out when he loses every time when he gets shot. That's what makes him funny to watch.
I think the reason that those Bravo shows work is because they're the only reality TV shows on television where you're watching someone who has any real fucking talent. It's like such a relief when you're watching Top Chef. It's like, oh, finally, this person has a reason to be on television because they have some talent, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think that might be a little bit harder.
And they're invested. They're along with the talent, they're genuinely invested in
it's their career.
And you don't think gaming is a talent?
I mean, I do.
I have to say, I feel it is.
Yeah, no, it is a talent. Although it's not so caught up in that sense of like self and career, at least not for most people yet.
Yeah, it would have to come after. It's like, maybe for like a game design or something it could work, but it'd be some case where you already can have a living doing
well, it. Well, and it's more about a certain intrinsic reflex, like skill. You know, it's not something you necessarily say like, oh, I'm really into RPGs and I'm going to study them and learn all about the various approaches and, you know, like become a very skilled RPG
player. Top speedrunners, you know?
Right.
I'd watch a speedrunners show. I got to admit,
that's a speedruns story.
Speedruns are cool. I fast forward through them even though they're fast, but I enjoy them nonetheless.
I'm thinking like Tim Gunn in my head. Okay, speedrunners, gather around.
It's make it work time. Go.
So,
I've been working on my jumps all day. I'm still getting caught up on the warp pipe.
Now for another retarded transition that we've mentioned, because we've mentioned gender differences, we've got a hero of the web that's about gender differences.
All right.
And this comes from DeviantArt forums.
Oh, no.
And it's poster Nuclear Ice. And he writes that female hardcore gamers... Oh, wait, he writes, female hardcore gamers, there are none? ? So, he says, I'm saying this because I've been trying to find a hardcore female gamer for ages. There are none. I play games competitively, mostly fighting games. I go to Smash Brother Melee tournaments, Street Fighter tournaments, Soul Calibur 2 and 3 tournaments. I see females go and compete, but never make it to the top 5, not even top 10. Why is this? I know they are known female gamers, but nonetheless, I could tear them apart like they are nothing, and it is depressing. I want a female girlfriend that can put up a fight. The last girlfriend I had, I told her I would dump her if she couldn't beat me at least once in Smash Brothers Melee. She had 2 months to practice, and so she did. Constantly. She was okay.
What?
But I still stalked her for like it was nothing. So I dumped her. I'm wondering why females can only play MMORPGs and The Sims, even though those games don't base on instinct, more on shortcut keys and quests. If any of you think you know a female that is hardcore or awesome at fighting games, tell me. I've hardly seen any. Other than that, get me a decent-looking one. Impossible!
Oh, my God.
And so it ends.
Anthony, how about your girlfriend?
Well, first off, I would never call my girlfriend, but
she said she was hardcore.
She is hardcore, but she
doesn't play fighting games.
Do you hope to make her a female girlfriend?
She doesn't. she doesn't play fighting games or shooters. She plays RPGs and stuff like that. But I would still call her hardcore, like the amount of games that she plays. Like just because she's not competitive.
If he wants the exact same thing as a dude, he should probably check for a male girlfriend.
Yeah. Plus, this is just bullshit. Like, he dumped his girlfriend for losing at Smash Brothers.
Oh, yeah. That's why he tells himself.
Hero of the Web is not about, like, a legitimate, like, let's talk to our forum posters. It's like, that guy, he can go without comment, or we can comment.
Yeah.
He's a good dude.
Yeah, I don't know. I think relationships in general, be them with the opposite sex or the same sex, I seriously doubt that you really want to get super involved in being competitive at something.
Good point.
Yeah, me and my wife played racquetball for quite a while in the mornings, and it didn't end well. Like, we were really competitive about it, and it just got to the point where it wasn't fun because it was a source of pure venomous hatred.
Racquetball.
Yeah.
I got to be that way with Melissa and mini golf even.
Yeah. You guys are way competitive. It's ridiculous. I've mentioned this before on the Brodeo, but you guys are so serious.
But I got to But there's ways around it. Like, I always can tell, like, okay, like, that's, she's like bummed out right now. It's like, then
that's when you turn the screws, man. Right when you see weakness, you pounce. Man, you suck.
And I don't really get mad. I love it. I love the fact that, like, because I have that whole thing I told you. Most people, you take the mini golf, they don't take it seriously. Like, after three holes, it gets to the point where they're just, like,
hitting it.
Yeah, just, like, talking to you and tapping the ball, like, 60 times, just, like, walking it to the hole, you know.
Like, I can't believe I'm going to kind of agree with our hero, but, there is something about playing and being evenly matched. Like, it's not necessarily, like, I agree that true competition and nasty competition can be very damaging to any friendship, actually. Yes. not just relationships, but you know, I have faced this with many of my friends on both sides, like gamer friends who are more skilled than I am, and then non-gamer friends I'm trying to get in to gaming. Like, it's hard when you have to be the one who, you know, is kind of like gimping the overall battle, or like if you're the one who's kind of like holding back or something. So, poor guy. He just, you know, I mean, he's got a great point.
You
I don't
better
mean,
watch out.
I don't mean to say
to
that. Totally.
I finally found my love.
I'm
he's
not saying that.
Up.
No, don't even suggest that. But
he's really like, he's got the demonia sex syndrome. We're totally misogynist until someone actually agrees to go on a date with them.
Oh, God.
And then he's like,
he turns into them.
Yeah, the world's biggest like worshiper of women.
I don't think I could handle the rejection.
Yeah.
the first thing I gotta know, girl, is how good are you at Super Smash Brothers Melee?
Dude, have you heard? Is this like Dimitri? Have you heard this thing that's been going around?
No.
It's like the world's douchiest voicemail thing. You heard this? It's incredible.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So for what should we tell people so now they have no understanding of what we're talking about?
It's a guy calling.
If someone wants to hear, search like Dimitri the Lover or something.
But basically, it's a guy calling and leaving multiple messages on some girl's answering machine who he obviously just approached on the street.
And she gave him her phone number out of pity or something.
Yeah, and it's basically him, you know, telling her why he's going to give her a shot at him because he's such a catch and he's so cool.
Girls approach me 5-6 times a day.
Yeah, it is outrageous.
You know, I'm one of the only, like, guys in this whole city that doesn't have a problem.
Yeah, or he'd be like, if you're mentally sound, give me a call back.
Yeah. like, if you were abused as a child and this is why you're not calling me back, if you were molested, if you have psychological issues, then don't call me back then. So fucked up. But he reminded me of, there was a season of The Amazing Race that I ended up watching and had this guy on there called Jonathan.
And
he had
and
like
Victoria.
And Victoria, yeah. And he reminds me of, if you take Jonathan, who up to that point was probably the most like repugnant person I'd ever seen, at least when dealing with, like, you know, the opposite sex. And if you take him and just magnify him to, like, the most grotesque caricature imaginable, except yeah. it's real, and then you got Dimitri.
Well,
we start talking about Dimitri. So something on YouTube that's worth checking out. I did want to give, I did want to point people to posts by Ventertain Me. And it's basically, I mean,
Ventertain Me?
Yeah, like Ventrilo. Okay. Just put the V in front of it. Yeah. I sent you some links. I don't know if you watch them. I know you did, Anthony, some of them.
They're really good.
And the tradition is now to go into, like, harass people in their Ventrilo servers. And that's basically like a prank call. Pretty fairly boring. There's hundreds and hundreds of these online. But this guy takes it to another level, and he does, like, clever things with it that make it awesome. So, you know, one quick example that is worth checking out is he goes in and he starts playing, like, the air noises you get on your PC at various times for, I mean, there's, you know, there's so many different types. And he starts playing those, and then the people are like, you know, they're raiding in World of Warcraft or something, and they're freaking out, and they're like, dude, just Alt-Tab and fix it. And the guy's like, no, it's my computer. It's freaking out. And like, and then we'll keep adding, you know, the noises from it and stuff. And then when they eventually get to the point where they figure it out, he starts recording them and playing them back into the server at each other. So then they're confused because they think they're talking to each other, but he's just playing their own voices. And then after they figure out that that's the thing, this is what makes him so successful in my mind, is that he's always has a contingency for when shit gets played out. So then he can always ramp it up. So then when they figure out, okay, he's recording us and playing us back, he turns it into a song. So it might be like, if someone's like, lo, he turns it into like the Rocky theme song, you know, like, lo, 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 lo. And it's like,
and he's, it's doing like, this live?
Live. Yeah. And then the music is synced to it. So he actually had it. But so in the one with the air noise thing, he gets them laughing. And they sound like Beavis and Butthead if you think about it, but you don't immediately until he loads up Crazy Train and starts using like their voices as like the equivalent of the vocal thing on top of it. And
this guy's like a griefing like genius or something. Yeah, what kind of setup do you need to be able to do all that stuff
to get it right? Yeah. And he's got a good sense of making fun of like it seems like almost all the people he gets are the kind of gamers that you don't want to believe exist, the ones that actually say lol and say it like that to each other, like lol, and seriously are like, I'm going to pun you. Dude, this guy's hacksawing. I mean, imagine someone seriously. We got hacksaws in here. Lol.
And that also, raid was full of win.
They're also the same people that immediately call him a fag.
Like, yeah, every, without fail. And so, but they also have this powerless thing where they say, all right, then I'm going to hack this guy's computer. And they say, like, I got your credit card info. And then the friends, you know how it gets bad where, like, one guy in a group starts to get a little overboard and even his friends who are supposed to be on his side are like, you do? Really? How did you get that? He's like, oh, I, you know, right through his IP, I'm looking at all stuff on his computer right now. And then the guy will just turn that into a song. And he ends up turning that guy against his friends because they're all then laughing at what an idiot he sounds like. saying idiotic things, but now in the form of a song. Like, they got NWA and Vanilla Ice and all this stuff. And then another one, he uses the head-on headache thing, which is great conceptually, because it's like, let's take a commercial for a headache remedy and use it to induce headaches in people. And he goes and he does crap with that. There's a Bub Rub, you know, Bub Rub video, the whistles go. So he does one where he stretches the woo for like a minute straight. And then there's this girl and she's like, no, stop. And he's like, you know, play some clip like, you know, the whistles go. And then she's like, no, don't do it. And he does it again and it just goes. And then it starts getting all like high and then low and then like, woo. Like, all going crazy and shit.
Man, this stuff sounds amazing.
Yeah. If anyone that's listening knows that guy, I'd love to. Get in touch with them.
I gotta know what his like setup is.
Yeah, you
it sounds crazy.
You have to check it out after this. It's a good way to like. I already said it, but yeah, it's a good way to. It's hard when I send the link to people and they first open it and they're like, "Oh boy, more ventrilo harassment. This is gonna be fun." And I just gotta be like, just stick with it. Like, you'll see why it's not the same.
All right.
I assume we're out of time.
I didn't stick with the link you sent yesterday.
What did I send you?
Fat Man?
Yeah.
Fat Shake Up 2008?
Was that the Iraqi kid?
No, that's the Iraqi kid. He's got a ton of nicknames. That was different. That's just the kid that runs the block.
You specialize in sending people like videos of fat dudes.
The Fat Man is like someone who's been notorious for the longest time. He's the one who has like... That's a good piece of watermelon, folks. Like, he says folks after everything. Uh-huh. But he's the one, he has a video where he eats, you know, 6 candy bars or 5 double cheeseburgers.
And he's
or
diabetic.
A vat of gravy and two liters of soda. But the Fat Man Fat Shake Up 2008, I said, it was a pretty good one.
He does a fat shake up annually. And so it's 2008.
What does that
version.
Mean?
It means he stands with only shorts on and truffle shuffles.
Shakes his stuff while going... Shake up 2000, folks. Oh.
I can bring it full circle. So does this have anything to do with the British definition of chuffing?
No.
I don't even know what the British definition of chuff is, which I think is kind of funny because the book I got the word chuff from was a word in Dwarvish, and it was written by Brits.
It's so bad.
So it's like they probably knew that when they wrote it. I didn't even think about that.
It's so bad you can't even say it on the radio.
Yeah, I have no idea what it means.
It's that bad.
It's not,
what does it mean? I don't know.
It's bugger in time.
Bugger in time?
No, it's not.
What does chuff mean?
I don't know. We'll have to
Someone
out.
Tell
Let's
us.
Ask our transatlantic
you at
listeners
home.
To...
It's a contest I'm posting the GFW thread with chuff.
Whoever has the best definition of chuff gets a copy of...
I don't know. I can
Top
send
Spin
a copy
3
of this.
For
I can
Nintendo
finish
DS.
Game Boys. I'll finish that probably that. Tonight and I'll send it.
Yeah? Okay.
But who's going to get it, though?
You'll like be randomly first? Selected.
Yeah.
Whoever, no, it's got to be the best one, the best definition.
Okay.
All right. Make it up.
Chuff with one F.
Honor. Yeah. Oh yeah. Last thing. Let's just give our public service announcements here. Okay. I've been blogging a lot more frequently, and in the past I said that I don't read the comments, and that depends. That might be the case if I'm writing about like Metal Gear or something, some other touchy subject where I know it's just going to like turn the comment section into a bunch of irrational shit. But for the last two, there were quite a few comments, and they were very intelligent and reasonable, and I just wanted to say that I read them all, and thank you for posting. Well, I had to say that because it's like I've gone and I've actively, by saying I don't read it, I've kind of like actively discouraged people from saying anything, and like now people are saying a whole lot of things that are worth reading, and they're having cool discussions and stuff. But
yeah,
I want to think that the Metal Gear freak spoiled me forever from...
Now you're just going to get a bunch of Metal Gear freaks.
Coming back, yeah. It's a cult, man.
Yeah. That's a fact.
Okay, next week we will return at E3. The Electronic Entertainment Expo. And we out.